And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Happy Monday morning to everyone. I hope you're starting your week with the same kind of hop in your step that Fernando Tatis Jr. has after taking a Cy Young winner deep twice. This is Monday's Mailbag with Ken Rosenthal. I'm Tim McMaster. I serve up the questions for Ken. Ken, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, Tim. How are you?
I am very good. Excited to get into the mailbag and some other topics as well. Please rate and review the pod on Apple or wherever you listen. I mentioned the other topics, Ken, at the top of the show. We like to cover some stuff that isn't necessarily in the mailbag before we get to the listener questions. And a few different things to get to this time, including, wow, Dodgers and Padres. The first series was fantastic. And then they get together for four more this weekend and right back at it. We're recording this before the Sunday night game. So going into this record, 3-3, the record between these two teams this season, and they've been awesome.
Really awesome. And it's so striking, Tim, to see the intensity with which these games have been played, especially since it's only April. And the other thing is all of the memorable moments that this series already has generated. And I can go right through and I'll pick my favorites out so far. First game, of course, yes, the bench is empty, but really the most memorable thing to me was David Price's sacrifice fly, two scoreless innings, 12-inning game, 11-6 Dodgers victory. The second game, who will ever forget Mookie's catch? Who saw it? It was an amazing catch. One of the best you'll ever see. Two on, two out in the ninth. Third game wasn't so memorable, but the Padres came back and Eric Hosmer had a couple of big hits. And then when the series resumed in Los Angeles, my goodness. Fernando Tatis Jr., the two home runs Friday night, of course, on the day that his father hit the two grand slams in one inning at Dodger Stadium in 1999. That was pretty memorable. And then the next night against Bauer, not just the two home runs, but the two trots in which he kind of made fun of some of Bauer's celebrations. It was highly entertaining. The one-eyed trot, the McGregor strut, the whole deal was great. The hop and skip, as you mentioned. So then after all that, you look at it and you say, wow, this is the kind of thing where during the playoffs, if this had happened, you'd say, wow, we'll be talking about this forever. And I don't know that this is much different, even though it's only April. So it's been so much fun to watch. It's been the kind of series where we forget about all of the problems that exist in baseball on and off the field. It really is what the sport should be. And I spoke with someone from MLB this week and said that to him. This is what you should bottle and market if they only could, right? If only every game was like this. It can't be. We know that. But, wow, it's been so much fun, something to behold.
We have one question in our mailbag that disagrees with you as far as bottling this excitement and this enthusiasm. We'll get to that, but I couldn't agree more. And to think these teams are going to face off 11 more times, it's just awesome. And then who knows, possibly in October as well. It's neat to have a new rivalry in baseball for sure. All right, you mentioned the non-fun things of baseball. And you and Eno Saris this week had a really interesting story out on The Athletic about the substances that pitchers are using for grip. And I guess the way to sum it up is, where does the pitcher using a substance for better grip to ensure batter safety and that better grip just to be a more dominant pitcher begin, right? It's a gray area.
It's a great way to put it, Tim. And there are always things I can talk about on a podcast that maybe I didn't include in the article simply because it wouldn't have fit in a journalistic style article. But I will relate a conversation that I had with the general manager in preparing that article. And he said, you guys, reporters, we are always you guys, like to admit that you blew it with the steroid era and you're apologetic for it, you own it, but you did blow it, right? And I can't argue that. We didn't report that as well as we should have. We were late to the party. And his point was that this is the same thing, that effectively there is cheating going on and it's not being adequately covered. And in fact, the sport is not being adequately covered. We talk about these pitching achievements nonstop. Wow, look at this. Wow, pitchers are so great today. Well, pitchers are so great today, it would seem, in part because they are applying foreign substances to baseballs. Now, as Eno Saris and I wrote, and Eno particularly had this section of the story, there might be a solution. The way to do it might be to combine or allow the combination of sunscreen and rosin, which is a combination used right now, but is less impactful on a pitcher's performance than some of the other substances being used. In that way, the pitchers would have something that would enhance their grip, which is necessary for safety. That's the one thing that distinguishes this particular issue from the steroid era. Steroids were simply illegal and harmful. The substances that are applied to baseballs are useful for pitchers in enhancing grip. So that is one suggestion. And then, of course, there was a lot in the article about the penalties and whether MLB will apply penalties. I'm not going to get into all the details now on why not. Basically, they're taking their time for a few different reasons. But in my view, this has to be addressed already. And it's not the principal driver of strikeouts and low batting average, but it is a factor. And if you're going to try to address the different problems in the sport, which relate to a lack of offense and a lack of action, you have to finally address this issue.
Yeah, that's a really good comparison to the steroid era. It is a little different because safety is involved to a degree, but pitchers are dominant across the game, and we're not looping him in any way with what you just said, Ken, but the most dominant pitcher right now was certainly on display this week, Jacob DeGrom, taking it to another level. This is a guy who has won two Cy Young Awards, and he was better the other night than he was probably ever at another time in his career. Just a special performance with the 15 Ks and all season long so far.
Absolutely. And what a thrill to watch that game on Friday night. The way he carved up the Nationals, it was as if the Washington Nationals were the Washington Generals and he was the one-man Harlem Globetrotters review. Yes. That's how good DeGrom was. And it is striking how far above the rest of the sport he is. Now, Corbin Burns is having a great year. Bauer's having a great year. There are other great pitchers. We know that. But this pitcher, Jacob DeGrom, kind of stands alone. And the thing that got me thinking when I watched this, and really the way watching the Mets the last several years, is the idea that we talk all the time about how the Angels are wasting Mike Trout's prime. We maybe should start talking about how the Mets are wasting Jake DeGrom's prime. And I'll give you a stat that indicates where I'm coming from, and I'll talk a little bit more about it. Since the start of 2018, Jacob DeGrom has made 80 starts, 80, 8-0. In those starts, his ERA is 2.00. The Mets' record in those starts? Below 500, 38-42. This is a guy who has pitched in the postseason with the Mets only once. That was 2015. You might remember, he was brilliant the first two rounds, not as good in the World Series against the Royals, but still, he was Jacob DeGrom. And then the next year, the Mets made the wildcard game, but he was unavailable because of injury. They lost the wildcard game, didn't advance. Haven't made the playoffs since. Now, granted, they're trying, as the Angels have tried with Trout in recent years, but to have this all happening, with the possibility that DeGrom could win his third Cy Young this year, joining Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw, matching their career totals, and not really get anything from it from a team perspective, that would be crushing.
Yeah, and just a 0.31 ERA so far this year in four starts, 50 strikeouts in 29 innings, and four starts, and he's only got two wins out of them, 2-1 on the season. He's been incredible for sure. Three straight games with at least 14 or more strikeouts. Are you ready to move on to the mailbag, Ken?
Let's do it, Tim. Hey, this is Ken. I'm not available right now. Please leave a voicemail.
All right, you know how to get involved. You can call the show and leave your voicemail. We love it when you do that. We get to hear your voice at 646-543-7072. You can also email tabaseballshow@gmail.com. We actually have more emails than voicemails this week, but let's start with the voicemail line, and let's start with a question about the Mets, although not about the pitching. It's about all those players lining up behind Jacob DeGrom.
Hey, Ken. Hope you're well. This is Joe in Nashville. I wanted to call and ask about the Mets' atrocious defense and how frustrated and concerned they have to be with it, with potentially Alonzo, Davis, Smith, and even Nimmo all either playing poorly or out of position. How do they fix this? It's just something we're going to have to live with. Anyway, love the show. Thanks. Be well.
Joe, very fair question, and a lot of Mets fans have been asking this question for quite some time. Sandy Alderson, during his two different times with the club, has generally built clubs that were pretty strong offensively, but kind of neglected their defense, and it shows. And the players you mentioned, it definitely shows with them, and they needed more than most teams to have the universal DH implemented, because that would have enabled them to do a few different things. They could have moved Dom Smith to first base, Alonso to DH. Still would have had the third base issue. Maybe they could have moved Brandon Nimmo, who is playing slightly better in center field this year, probably could be average at that spot. Could have moved him to left, gotten a great center fielder, which they did not do in the offseason. They talked about Springer, did not sign him. Never seemed to be really in on Jackie Bradley Jr. So once the season starts and once you don't have the universal DH, it's kind of difficult to fix this on the fly. I guess there are certain things that they could do, but you're going to have to bench Smith or Alonso, who are two of your better offensive players, to really upgrade the defense. And maybe you can find a better third baseman at the deadline. Maybe it's Chris Bryant. But at the same time, J.D. Davis is pretty productive offensively. It's just that he is limited in the field. So I don't see this being fixed this season. Can they play better? Yes, they can play better. In fact, they did it this weekend. Saturday, they were terrible. That was the game I had on FS1. Conforto misplayed a ball, had a poor throw. Dom Smith misplayed a ball. Sunday, they were much better. They had a relay to get a runner at the plate, played a crisper game, won the series versus the Nationals. But I don't see this as a problem, Joe, that is necessarily going to be resolved anytime soon.
I always assumed that Jackie Bradley Jr. would end up there. There was trade rumors for years, and then he finally reaches free agency, and it just never happened. And that defense is certainly struggling. All right, we got an email from Andrew Marasco, and I kind of teased this at the beginning of the show, but here you go. Andrew says, love the show, love the insight you guys bring. It's Saturday night, and I just saw highlights of Fernando Tatis Jr. hitting two home runs for the Padres against the Dodgers and performing some elaborate bat flips and home run celebrations. At what point do you think Major League Baseball will step in and start penalizing players for showboating or slow down pace of play?
Absolutely never is my hope. And I don't expect it's going to be like that. This sport markets the Let the Kids Play campaign. They seemingly are encouraging freedom of expression, for lack of a better term. And that is exactly, in my opinion, what the sport needs. Now, obviously, there's a line that you don't want to see crossed when you're disrespecting the other player in a way that is quite obvious, in a way that really is kind of insulting to that player. But if you saw Trevor Bauer's quotes after Tatis's home runs on Saturday night, he basically endorsed what Tatis was doing, and it said he enjoyed it. He's all for it because he believes, and Bauer has been consistent on this for quite some time, he believes that this sport needs more entertainment. And you don't want to see it become the WWE, but what Tatis did Saturday night was nothing like that. Even what Bauer did with the holster and the sword, it was more amusing and entertaining, players having fun with each other. And honestly, I believe that sport does need a good amount more of that. And I'll leave you with something else, Andrew. Eric Kratz, former Major League catcher, tweeted, I believe over the weekend, about Rougned Odor and the influence that Odor is having on the Yankees. And basically what Kratz said was that the Yankees are a very professional, buttoned-up group, and Odor gives them a little bit of personality. Now, Odor is a bat-flipping fool, But that element, that energy that he brings, that's a healthy thing. So, yes, there is a line. We don't seem to know where the line is. That's why we have unwritten rules, I guess. But I don't see anything that happened over the weekend with Tatis or Bauer, for that matter, as crossing that line. And frankly, it's welcome. It's what people were talking about. Tatis's tweets that followed were hysterical. And I say more of it, not less.
Yeah, and as far as pace of play, Fernando Tatis taking an extra couple steps backwards along the bases, that's not the problem with pace of
that's
play.
That's the least of it.
Yeah, exactly. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Sticking with the email, and Ken, we're going international. And I don't mean we've had Canada. We're excited that we've had some people from Blue Jays fans weigh in. But we got Alberto from Spain. I became a huge baseball fan because of Joey Votto and also learned to appreciate Ted Williams because of that. Love him as a player and as a person and a character. Do you think he's a Hall of Famer?
Alberto, in my opinion, the answer is yes. And I appreciate this question because it kind of is important right now as we start to appreciate players in a different way because of the advanced stats. Votto is one of those players. Now, maybe 20, 30 years ago, you'd look at a guy who entered Sunday with 299 home runs and less than 2,000 hits and say, he's not making the Hall of Fame, especially as a first baseman. But Votto had a career line of 303 batting average, 418 on base, 516 slugging. His OPS plus was 148. And that's 48% better than the league average. That's the park-adjusted, league-adjusted number. It's the one that kind of balances everything between guys who play at Coors Field, guys who play at Petco Park, and everywhere in between. That OPS plus for first baseman with 7,000 or more plate appearances. I know I'm picking that number out of the air, but it's a big career mark, 7,000. Higher than Willie McCovey, Hall of Famer. Higher than Albert Pujols, future Hall of Famer. And as the electorate gets younger, as older voters fall off and younger voters come in, we're going to see players like Votto get more appreciation than they would have in the past. We've already seen it with a few different players. Burt Blyleven stands out. He was a guy that was helped by sabermetrics. Tim Raines is another. And Votto, in my view, because of his peak, because of his immense on-base skills, he has a real chance here to get in as well. And I'll leave you with this. Fred McGriff is a guy I believe should be in the Hall of Fame. 493 home runs. His OPS plus wasn't anywhere near Votto's. He was at 134, Votto's at 148. Todd Helton, a guy who might get in. His OPS plus is below McGriff's, 133. And he had 369 career home runs. So ultimately, by the time Votto is eligible, and remember, that's 5 years after he retires, I expect that he'll be a pretty healthy choice for the electorate. It may be not a first ballot, but certainly within the first 5 years.
All right. Alberto keeps spreading the love of baseball in Spain. I mentioned being international as far as Canada. Let's go back to another Blue Jay fan here in the emails. Loves the show, loves the storytelling and analysis. His question is, as a passionate Blue Jays fan, do you think this team is ready for the playoffs?
Right now, no. And I say that because we haven't seen the full Blue Jays team. That's one of the problems. Springer is supposedly going to come back from that quad strain and oblique issue this week. That will help. He's a huge player for them. He's not been there the whole season. Teoscar Hernandez, he's been on the COVID injured list since April 9th. And really, their pitching has suffered blow after blow in terms of injuries. Ryu just had that minor right glute strain on Sunday. Hopefully that's nothing. Julian Mayweather, Thomas Hatch, Nate Pearson, Ross Stripling, they're all on the injured list. Robbie Ray spent some time on the injured list. This team, to me, had pitching questions coming into the season that I thought would be difficult to overcome. Now, early on, they've gotten some good answers. Mats has been outstanding. Robbie Ray has looked good. And It seems to me if they can get that straightened out, if they can get their pitchers healthy, remember Mayweather was kind of the talk of the first week, what he did at Yankee Stadium, then they'd have a chance. But I need to see them healthy before I can really judge them. They also have some defensive questions. Left side of the infield's been kind of problematic in that sense. But give me Teoscar Hernandez. Give me George Springer. Give me Stripling and Mayweather. Give me all these guys, and I'll take my chances, of course, providing no one else gets hurt.
We go back to the voicemail and to the Houston area.
Paul in Houston, Texas. What should the Seattle Mariners do with Mitch Haniger? Should they give him a 3-year contract extension? Should they trade him? How much would a 3-year contract extension cost? What kind of trade value would he have given his injury history? Thank you.
These are good questions. And Haniger is an interesting case because he hasn't been healthy, is healthy again, and playing a really important role in what has been a surprising start, no question. Now, the Mariners have done this before, and then they've faded, and we'll see if that happens again, but certainly they are one of the surprise teams in the game right now. Now, Haniger is 30 years old. He has 1 year of arbitration left after this season. So he's making about $3 million this year. Then he has a year of arbitration left in 2022 before he becomes eligible for free agency. So he'll be a free agent entering his age 32 season. That's generally a tricky age for free agents, no question. And it's generally a tricky age for a team that is relying on young players. So at the deadline, the Mariners are going to face a decision, depending on where they are in the standings. If they're in it, you would hope they would not trade him. I would expect that would be the case. But if they're not in it, and maybe they look at it and try to get what they can from Mitch Haniger and get a few more players who can match up with the younger talent that they have as they go forward in their rebuilding. Haniger is a risky guy for an extension because of the health history. And I'd like to see him play more if I were the Mariners before awarding him that kind of deal. But at the same time, you're going to need veterans at some point in this rebuilding process, and he's one of them right now. The only players they have signed long-term are Marco Gonzalez and Evan White. Their commitments, starting in 2023, when Haniger would be in his first year of the new deal, just $14 million combined. So they can afford either Mitch Haniger or someone like Mitch Haniger. It's just a question of which choice they make.
All right, back to the emails we go. And Fred Resler has been listening to the show and has some questions about some past topics. He says, first off, love the pod. Makes my Monday morning run much more tolerable. I'd appreciate some clarification on a few things, please. You want to return the role of starting pitchers to prominence, and part of the plan to do that is to ban the shift and allow batters to continue using technology in the dugout so that they can make adjustments. That seems contradictory, says Fred.
It does, Fred, but at the same time, if you look at all of the things weighted toward batters and pitchers right now, I would say that the pitchers have a lot more things in their favor than the hitters do. They, in fact, use video as well as hitters do during games, so that's really kind of a moot point. And then as far as the shift is concerned, yes, the idea would be to enhance offense, but I don't know that it would have a dramatic effect on the way starting pitchers are used in particular. There are some things that would have an effect on starting pitchers and maybe lengthening them out and forcing that issue. And one would be simply carrying fewer pitchers on each team's roster. If you limited that, let's say you said only 12 per team on a 26-man roster, then you'd be forced to deploy your pitching differently. You'd be forced to rely on your starting pitcher more because you'd have fewer relievers to work with. And that would have a pronounced effect. That is something that has been discussed. The other thing, and this is a much more controversial topic, is the strike zone. And actually, we talked about this on the FS1 broadcast Saturday at some length. And John Smoltz said, what if you just lower the strike zone, take away the high strike that would force pitchers to be more in the zone in that area and give hitters a better chance? That would be beneficial to pitching. And then I talked about a little the idea of just shrinking the strike zone, top to bottom. And the idea would be similar. Force pitchers to come in the zone. They'd probably do that with fastballs more than breaking balls, since fastballs are easier to control. Then you'd see more contact, more balls in play, and maybe that would be a positive effect on offense. Again, all of these things are in play, and the combination of factors, if baseball ever settles on something, is going to be critical because it's the balance. It's the combination that is going to make this go or not go. But when you're talking strictly about starting pitchers and making them more prominent and keeping them in games longer, you shrink that staff, you're going to have an effect that's going to be quite pronounced. You cannot pull guys every night after five innings if you've only got a limited number of relievers to work with.
Just a numbers game at that point. All right, another email, this one from Andrew Goldberg. He says, for a sport that values statistics so highly in its record books, it feels weird to me that every ballpark has different dimensions and their walls are different heights. It seems hard to truly say who the all-time hits leader is, home run leader, ERA leader, if they all play in vastly different ballparks. It's like having some basketball court sizes, rims, and basket heights in the NBA different. So essentially, why haven't Major League Baseball or its teams ever had a uniform ballpark dimension dating all the way back?
Andrew, I'm going to answer your question with a question. Would you like Fenway Park to look like Citi Field? Would you like Citi Field to look like Wrigley Field? Would you like all of these parks homogenized to the point where they all were essentially the same? No, you wouldn't, I don't think. Part of the beauty of our game is that the parks are all built with different dimensions. Some of them, the ones that date back to the early part of the 20th century, Wrigley and Fenway were fit into city neighborhoods, and that's why their dimensions are the way they are. And then some of the newer ones were built with some funky features. The big right field wall at Camden Yards is one example, and they are part of the charm of those particular ballparks. So that's a good thing for the sport, in my opinion. And the other issue you raise here, the main issue is, okay, what about the stats? You can't really measure because it's not normalized. Actually, we have statistics now, and I referred to one of them earlier, that do exactly that. Now, they're not perfect, but OPS plus and ERA plus and weighted runs created plus, all of these statistics, they're advanced metrics, have built into them park factors, park adjustments. And that's how you can compare a hitter at Coors Field to a hitter at Petco Park. It's not perfect, as I said, but it is a good way to do it. And even if, one last point, we had every park with the same dimensions, you could not account for weather, right? Coors Field is a mile high. That's part of the reason Coors Field plays the way it does. Petco Park has a marine layer. St. Louis and Kansas City in the summer, quite humid, like Baltimore. All of these things cause different things to occur in games, and that, again, is where park factor comes in and park adjusted stats come in and really help us gain an understanding of what these different things do to different players and enable us to compare them more properly.
Great point with the weather, because you think of the NFL and you have your, you know, you have Lambeau Field, you have Miami, you have different types of teams that play in those, although they throw it all over the field in all the teams now. But for many years, you know, if you were the Green Bay Packers, you were going to run the ball a little more because of that crappy weather come playoff time. It's not all that different. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back to the voicemail we go. And Ken, it was only a matter of time before we had a question regarding the Astros cheating scandal, but here you go.
My name is Ryan Polisano, and thank you for this show. I love it. And I have a question for you regarding my Houston Astros. I've been a fan since I was 3 years old. I have lost all respect for the club, and I'm still a fan, but it's hard for me to root for a team that did that. And Altuve, Verlander, Correa, none of them stepped up, took blame, and even when they did take blame, it wasn't authentic. So how do I get over this, and how long does it take for me to become a all-in fan again? I'm a fan of baseball players, teams, but right now the Astros are very hard for me to just root for. And the fact that AJ Hinch is still in the game and Alex Cora is still a manager, just it really hurts.
Ryan, I understand where you're coming from, and I can't advise you what to think. The beauty of being a fan is that a fan is entitled to his or her own opinion, and that no matter what sports writers say and however angry we make you, you can still think whatever you want. I try to explain this to people sometimes. They don't seem to quite understand it. The reality here is that certain fans like yourself are going to have a problem with the Astros and certainly with what they did. A number of other fans, and I hear from them quite frequently, believe that the Astros were singled out in our reporting. They believe that time has passed, the punishment for the managers have been served, and the team as well, with the draft picks being lost, and just move on. And that's a phrase you frequently hear with people who commit misdeeds. We just want to move on. And I understand that. In the case of Hinch and Cora in particular, they have served punishments, harsh punishments, one-year suspensions. And I know people were upset that they were allowed to come back so quickly, but they served their penalties. And beyond serving their penalties, their names are forever besmirched by their association with the scandal. The players, of course, were not penalized. And if you remember, that was a condition of them granting immunity to the commissioner's office in their investigation. And it's not clear whether the commissioner's office could have ever penalized them, even if that immunity had not been granted. Some of their apologies, I will grant you, were not what people would want. I don't believe that whoever was advising them did a very good job advising them. I was there the day Altuve and Bregman stood out there at their spring training complex and attempted to apologize, and it did not sound very sincere. At the same time, the sport does move on. The sport has adopted new rules as a result of the scandal, and it is your choice, it's the choice of any fan, whether he or she wants to continue to support that team and that ownership, which of course presided over this, or whether it wants to perhaps support another team, or even perhaps not support the sport at all or pay attention to the sport at all. I kind of believe it's only baseball, and I say that as someone whose job is to cover the sport and whose every waking hour, it seems, is devoted to that. But we're not talking about world peace here or anything of great substance. It's a sport. And yes, misdeeds occurred, but at the same time, the price was paid. We could disagree on what the price should have been too and what the penalty should have been, but I would say at this point, if I were a fan of the Astros, I would not be happy with what happened. I would not dismiss what happened, but I would still root for my team.
Yep, you root for a team because it makes you happy. So when that team's making you happy again, then, you know, go back to doing it. All right, a couple more emails, Ken. This one's, with all these new rules being instituted into baseball, it changes certain things and raises questions. That's what this one's about. In this scenario, does the pitcher get credited with a perfect game? And here's the scenario. Pitcher for the home team retires the first 27 batters, but his team fails to score. In the top of the 10th, a runner is placed at second base because of the new rule. Pitcher retires the next three hitters. Bottom of the 10th, his team gets a walk-off. According to Elias, that's still a perfect game. I question it. Isn't one of the requirements of a perfect game that there are no base runners, or does the rule require the base runner to only be allowed by the pitcher? It's a really good question from Mike Schwartz.
It is a really good question, Mike. And I actually asked the people at Stats Research to help out with this one because I wasn't quite sure of the answer. And I know what you were saying about Elias saying that, hey, it is a perfect game. That's the way it would be recorded if that happened, but I wanted to know for sure. I wanted some confirmation. And the people at Stats, who were so helpful to myself, Jason, and so many others, they referred me to a tweet from a Major League vice president named Corey Schwartz, of all things. And he said it would count, in that tweet he said, it would count as a perfect game because auto runners don't count against a perfect game or no hitter. Now let's dive a little bit deeper into this. I believe that's the correct ruling on it, by the way. And the reason is you cannot fault a pitcher for a runner that is placed on second base that he had nothing to do with. Now, you could fault his team, perhaps, for not winning the game earlier and say, well, if the team had scored runs, they wouldn't be in this situation, therefore it's not a perfect game. But that, to me, is a stretch. And in my view, you've got to honor the perfection that the pitcher attained, even if his team didn't score for him and put him in a position where the ghost runner, as Jason likes to call him, was on second base. So that's the ruling. I happen to agree with it. I don't really know any other way.
Yeah, you can't penalize the pitcher, I think, in that situation. Plus, now you're talking about a 10-inning perfect game. I mean, it's something special. All right, one more email. This one, back to pace of play, Ken. With all the talk about Major League Baseball improving pace of play, it just seems like so much lip service when you actually attend a game. If they're really interested in speeding things up, the umpires need to enforce the current rules. I was at a recent Padres-Pirates game in Pittsburgh. Despite the clock in center field running well past the zero mark pretty much every single time it was activated, not once did the umpire make any effort to get things moving, let alone enforcing the rules. The 8.5-inning game took 4 hours and 7 minutes. At one point, a disgruntled fan yelled, "Come on, ump, it's a school night." Is it that the umps just don't care about pace of play? They sure act that way, taking way longer than necessary with replays, etc. And shouldn't Major League Baseball be able to make the umpires enforce these existing rules? Keep up the great work.
To the first point about the clock, I just want people to understand that's the clock that is counting down between innings. There's no pitch clock in the game, but right. There is a clock that basically tells you when you should resume. Now, I would agree that the umpires do not enforce many of the rules to the point where certain fans would like them to enforce. That said, the umpires are dealing with players and managers and coaches who outnumber them and who are going to do kind of what they want to do and who are the product. The umpires are not the product. And when the umpires get too involved, what do? We complain about that, right? So they're not empowered, in my view, by Major League Baseball and their own union to really act. And it's just an uncomfortable position for them to be in. What the sport has to do is improve structurally so where the umpires aren't facing this burden. And go back to the substance question, the foreign substances that pitchers apply to baseballs. The umps theoretically could check a player or pitcher anytime they want, but they generally do not do it unless the manager requests that it be done. And again, if they were out there every 3 minutes, people would go crazy. So the infrastructure, if you want to call it that, for lack of a better phrase, kind of has to change before the umpires get the full responsibility here. I don't believe they are fully responsible. Could they push things along a little bit quicker? Yes. But what we've seen is Major League Baseball does not penalize hitters enough, pitchers enough for delaying the game. And therefore, guys just kind of do what they want. We hear this talk all the time. Oh, yeah, this year, guys who step out of the box, blah, 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 they'll be fine. No, it never happens. Or it might happen, but it's not a strong enough deterrent to stop the behavior or alter the behavior. So I wouldn't put this on the umpires as much as I would put it on MLB.
The umpires don't want to be at the ballpark all night long either. Let's be honest, right? They would like to get things moving along if they could. All right, great questions this week. If you want to get involved for next week, you can call us. Again, the number is 646-543-7072 or email the show, tabaseballshow@gmail.com. Ken, this week, I know you're going out to the – well, not out to. You'll be in studio, but – you're checking out the wild AL Central, which seems to be on its head right now, but White Sox and Indians should be, when all is done and settled, in the hunt this season.
I agree, Tim, and it's been a long time since I did a White Sox game on Fox or FS1. In fact, I cannot remember the last time I did one. So I'm excited that they're on again in a more regular fashion, as they should be, because they're a good team. And the Indians, of course, are perennially an interesting team, especially with the starting pitching they have. So I'm looking forward to this, and I can say this as well. Starting in mid-May, I'm going to be traveling to the different sites where we do the games every week. So that's going to be quite refreshing to finally be able to get back out there in a more regular fashion. That's what I love to do, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I could stop correcting myself when I say where you're headed this week. That'll be exciting. Yeah, the Central's wild. The Royals still in first. The Twins in fourth, but those things tend to work themselves out over the course of the season. All right, if you want to check out Ken's great writing work, of course, you can always join The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/baseballshow. Right now, you can join for just $3.99 a month. All the great writers and all the different sports, we have it all at The Athletic. And keep it locked to The Athletic Baseball Show all week long. Coming up on Starkville on Tuesday, Jay Bruce is joining Jason and Doug, the newly retired Jay Bruce. That'll be a lot of fun. Then Hunter Pence and Grant Brisby coming up on Thursday, Keith Law and Derek Van Riper on Friday. For Ken Rosenthal, I'm Tim McMaster. Have a great week, everyone. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.